today we're going to be talking about, since we're in one of these dreaded international breaks, even though we've got some good football action here in the States and in Canada, between MLS, NASL, and USL, the teams that have not been affected by international call-ups, because it seems like the calls are getting greater for those leagues to break, too, because so many guys are missing this weekend. But we have no club action in Europe, this at least top division and second division club action in Europe this weekend. So we're in an international break. So we are going to focus on something completely different today, which is social media and how it's been driving the conversation, for better or for worse. I think a lot of people would think for worse here in our wonderful world of football. So let me bring in Steve Brandt, who's a great friend, a great supporter of the game, knows more from a sophisticated point of view about this sport than just about anyone in the American soccer press. Steve, how are you today? How are things in upstate New York?
Not bad. It's hot. It's probably hotter than Florida up here. I'm up in Buffalo, and I took my walk home from work, and I finally got around the corner. I'm like, it's still cold. I mean, it's still very, very warm.
Yeah, I talked to someone in Toronto earlier today who told me basically the same thing, that it was balmy, and it was they cannot wait for fall to come, and then winter comes, and that's miserable up your way. But let's dive into this topic, Steve, because you know one of the things that I've noticed now as we – even this week. Let's just talk about this week. Transfer window closes in Europe. I think the conversation was so fueled by social media about the transfer window, who's a good signing, who's a bad signing. And you're a Liverpool supporter, so maybe you could speak to this. Brendan Rodgers has made a number of signings these last two years, summer window last year, summer window this year. I can't remember if you brought in anyone in January last year. Maybe you did. But it seems like the perception of these players, at least from where I sit, has been fueled, the perception of these players among media. People actually cover Liverpool. People actually cover the Premier League, fueled by what's on Twitter.
You know, that's what's strange about the sport. I mean, before thinking about the negative of social media, let's be honest. Social media has done a lot of good for the sport. I mean, I don't know you without social networking. I don't have a podcast without it. I don't know Chris. Well, I mean, there's a lot of good. I mean, it's a great way to connect with a lot of people in this. I mean, as Kardec said, I'm in Buffalo. We all know where he is. He's in Fort Lauderdale. So it's a great way to connect with people and share me. The problem I've always had with it is it's such a knee-jerk, fall down, every player is bad type of thing, because the one player that your team transferred in, you had a bad save in Football Manager with. So he's horrible. Like Mario Balotelli. Now, I'll tell you, I've been playing Football Manager since God 06. Each one, he's a different type of player. The one in 15 that I'm playing now on my phone, he sets the world afire at Liverpool, sets the world afire. But because we are such a reactionary society, and this is among all media, all types of subjects, is that we have to be the first to hate on something.
Yeah.
And that's aggravating to me. I mean, it's almost turned me away from being a Liverpool fan, because 90% of the time, everything Brendan Rodgers does is horrible.
Right.
Every player he's transferred in is horrible. Every way he treats a player is horrible. He probably breathed today, and some player didn't like
it. Well, what is it about Rodgers? Because we didn't see – I mean, again, this may be the bias of Liverpool fans, and I hate to pick on you, Steve, but we didn't see this sort of reaction to Kenny Dalglish, who, by the way, made several signings that were much worse than Rodgers' worst signings, and whose placement in the league has never been as high as in his second stint, of course, as manager, as high as Rodgers. Well, I mean, what is it about you guys, Liverpool fans?
Well, you're taking two different things here. You're talking about Brendan Rodgers, who has nothing to do with Liverpool before he shows up,
right,
and Kenny Dalglish. Kenny Dalglish is a god in Liverpool. For not only for what he did around Hillsborough, and he still does a lot of work with the Hillsborough families, but for being a player, being a manager. So basically, the man can walk on water, and nothing he does wrong. Now, I'll be honest, I am a Liverpool fan because of Ken Dalglish. I didn't get to see him play or manage the first time, so seeing him what happened later. The sport had passed him by the second time he came back. He did get to two cup finals and get the team back into Europe. Good. But Liverpool, and I assume this is going to be the case 20 years from now with Man City, is that they're so insular because they've really never liked outside managers. It took them a while to warm up to Rafa Benitez, and now he's a Spanish scouser.
Yeah.
So that's what you're seeing with the hatred of Brendan Rodgers, because he was not a former player. Now, yeah, he played, but he had a horrific injury. But what you see is that regardless of what he does, it's always going to be wrong. He could set the league on fire, win the title going away, and it would not be like Bill Shankly would do it, because all these players don't like him. I would rest assured, if you went back and had this type of media back in the 80s, you would see something completely different. Now, yeah, I'm not saying Kenny Dalglish is a saint.
Right, but managers wouldn't last as long, right? They wouldn't last as long. I was really relieved to see the piece by Neil Ashton today in the Daily Mail about Manchester City, because it was a very intelligent piece about Manchester City's transfer policies and Raheem Sterling, et cetera. The types that we have not seen yet in the British press, because there was so much reaction to what was going on social media. I think perceptions of things have been created to where managers can't survive for very long, right? We're seeing this, right? Managers are reacting to social media. The boardrooms are reacting to social media.
Well, exactly. I mean, we just had the case of a social media famous manager get his feet cut out from underneath him. Because let's be honest, Thomas Rongen is one of the best follows, and I'm sure you've met him and talked to him in person. He's a very fun guy. We saw the other side of why being on social media is probably not good for you. Because, I mean, you look at what it is that during a game, and us in America get it a lot different than what people are going to be listening to this overseas, is that we see every game in every league all the time. Yes. So we're able to sit here and diagram or talk about the game.
Yeah, people in England, by the way, are very jealous of us when I tell them, even on our EPL, our World Soccer Talk Review pod, I tell Lawrence McKenna, my co-host, hey, I saw all 10 games. NBC showed all 10 games in one form or another. They have to wait for Match of the Day to see things, right? So we see everything. Yeah, go on. Continue.
Yeah, exactly. And see, my 71-year-old father always refers to the BBC as everything. They get all the games. I'm like, not really. We're the ones that get it. So that's what's really driving social media, is the angst behind it's because we get to see so much of the sport. And there are so many people, and especially on this side of the raindrop, that are watching it and analyze it because they grew up watching only great soccer. I mean, when you wrote your book, you talked about how you had to follow it at different times. People growing up nowadays, I would say from about 18 to about 30-year-olds, do not understand that up until maybe 5 years ago, we would get like one game a month.
Yeah.
So seeing all this, and it's even different for you, because I know you watched the original Strikers. Now, we get to analyze so much soccer, so everything is bad. And that's what gets me, is that truly some of the fun times I've had are going to games, watching games, coaching games, writing about games, is that this sport is, when it's played well, and even sometimes when it's not played well, it's a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, you know, speaking of, that's a really interesting point, because I'm forgetting the gentleman's name. Famous gentleman from the Liverpool area, Scouser, wrote a collection of short stories a few years ago, and I talked to him a few years back about Bob Paisley specifically. And he made the point that in this day and age, with television shows and social media and all of this, because Paisley was living in Shankly's shadow, he never would have gotten 2-3 years to finally win the European Cup and then become this legendary manager with his own record, which compares comparably to Shankly. He would have been gone.
I imagine what Leeds would have been with all... Oh, and I just blanked on his name. Imagine Clough at Leeds nowadays.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, right.
Imagine Clough nowadays. Clough nowadays would probably be... these two are not the same type of person. It would be kind of wrong-in.
Yeah, Clough would be on Twitter. He'd be saying the things he did. And so this is the question. Let me ask you, because there were a lot of people after Rangnick was sacked that said to me, you know, he probably deserved it because of what he was doing on Twitter after games, even when they would lose, and he would make a joke out of it, and he would interact with people like you and me, right? I mean, we're two of the guys who probably talked to him the most. So, what do you think about that? Because people are like, not many people, but there are some people came in and said, well, he deserved it. And there are people in the game who told me, well, he deserved it. It doesn't matter that they were performing okay and that they were in a spot to make the postseason. His antics on Twitter mean that he shouldn't be a head coach.
Well,
fair or unfair?
I'm going to temper this by saying, because I also lost my collective mind on Twitter right after I saw this happening, because Rangnick has been really good to me.
And I lost my mind too. So, I know I was out of control that day. That whole day, it was now 2 weeks ago, right? Friday, 13 days ago.
Yeah.
You and I, among others, were very animated all day. We will say, leave it that way.
Now, I will say, when I originally thought of it, part of it was my thought that he didn't get enough time to implement what he wanted. Now, the other thought in my mind, and rightfully so, I think he was a little bit too easy to talk to. I mean, we all know, if you listen to the Unused Substitutes pod, he was there every Monday.
Yeah.
Every Monday, he would sit there, he'd have a beer, he'd have a burger, and talk about the game. When I had you and him on air, I did not clear that with the Rowdies. I talked to him personally. He said, yeah, I will come on. Now, that was probably not a good thing. Now, I also got a scarf to him there at the Rowdies, and he took pictures of it all over Al Lang Stadium. So I think his ego was going to get the best of him anyway, and I think he's kind of seeing that because he's been real tempered since the firing. But I also thought he was going to be gone within a couple of years, that some MLS team was going to come for him, that – There are teams in MLS right now that would do well with him. I mean, put that man in Chicago, and he would be loved.
Yeah, put him in Philly. I think Philly could really use him, because Philly also has had enough young players come through that he could identify talent. He could work through that. Farouk was also fired that day. Farouk has kept a lower profile on social media since as well. So I'll point that out. Farouk Qureshi. And by the way, just a little shameless plug here. I did a podcast yesterday with Farouk's son, George, who is the publisher and editor and everything, all the good stuff with Howler Magazine. We talked about the NASL, MLS, USSF situation. So let's go to that, Steve. Here's where Twitter now has become, here in the United States, we'll get back to the transfer window in England in a few minutes, but where I see that there's a real problem is these ideological camps. I guess we'll start with Ted. We'll start with soccer reform. We'll start with Ted Westerveld. There has become now ideological camps, as far as I'm concerned, between NASL fans and MLS fans and maybe some USL fans, but they're really not partaking in this, and people who are strict adherents And we'll get to the Klinsmann thing in a minute. So, but NASL fans, MLS fans, and you can't be have a reasoned opinion in the middle without being attacked by both sides. And it's almost like, Steve, and I'm going to say this, maybe you disagree with this, that the talking points that are coming from the Cosmos fans on one side, this whole, it seems like there are more Cosmos fans on Twitter than people actually going to Cosmos games. And they all have the same talking points, and they all sing from the same song sheet. The battle between them on one side and then the core pro single entity kind of big soccer driven MLS fans on the other is insufferable. And I think the leagues themselves take those talking points, and then that's their talk. Those are their talking points for their own battle. They're getting it generated by fans on Twitter and by Ted. Well,
you're not completely wrong with that. I mean, and I have talked to Ted a number of times. I was on a podcast with him a while back. Now, we can all admit when you listen to Ted, he's not a dumb man by
any stretch
of the imagination. And there are very few people that actually know the history of the sport as well as that guy does. I mean, some of the stuff that he posts up on his other account is really cool. And I hope he finishes that damn book he's been writing for years. I am not completely convinced, and they will never be able to prove this to make me feel good enough, that I think that 90% of the Pro Rel crowd is actually Ted. to this day, no one can ever accuse me until I see a picture of Gary, Ben, and Ted all standing next to each other. I am not convinced those three aren't all him.
What about the soccer geek? What about the long list of New York Cosmos fans?
That's another problem.
Right. And then the Cosmos organization reacts to them because then they pile on me and say I'm biased and all this nonsense that they start about. And then, of course, you know, I do have my biases. I prefer Florida teams. I'm upset the Rowdies didn't win the spring championship. I still am. So I by pointing out there were a couple bad calls that went against the Rowdies in the spring and it benefited the Cosmos, then I had a legion of hate, which just goes along with this other thing.
I'm not well thought of among the Cosmos fans anyway. And I have openly – there are teams that I just don't approach when – because if you've listened to my show, I've talked to everybody, every level. I'm one of the few MLS bots that's talked about every level. The tenor of the Cosmos crowd is almost as bad as the Emerald City supporters group, is that they are so assured that MLS is out to cook them because MLS does not want to be like the old NASL. Well, folks, let's be brutally honest, MLS won. They outlived what the old NASL was, and they did it pretty effectively. Now, MLS isn't perfect. I'm sure Don Garber, if you put some truth serum in him, would say the same thing too. I don't stand most of the negative people. Once they start going a little bit sideways, I block them because I'm 90% a smartass online. I mean, I do that just to annoy the snot out of people, and I'm blocked by a lot of people. I'm not blocked by some people, and it surprises me, but the tenor of the Cosmos fans, and I have to temper this because I know a couple Cosmos fans that are just really, truly great guys, is annoying. And this doomsday worst-case scenario is bad. Now, it's because of Manchester City Jr. NYCFC, and how that was all brought in, and that it was not the Cosmos, and it's just obnoxious.
But the Cosmos made the decision before that to go to NASL because they said they wanted to protect their brand rights, their property, all this stuff. Right? I think Garber, I'm speaking out of school, but being someone who worked for the NASL at the time when we brought the Cosmos into the league, there was shock among MLS people because they always assumed that they were going to have access at some point to that game. But then they cooked them, right? They went and got Man City with all their money and then the Yankees involved, and they knew they had to beat them. They went and got the heavy artillery.
you could not – this is where I'm going to kind of differ in a point, is that you could not put the Cosmos in MLS with what they were, is that that neuters that brand right away. It's kind of probably a help that their NASL, forever how long the NASL is going to be around, because it shines a light on another league, no matter if it's Division One, Division Two, Division Four, Division Seven, whatever it is, that it makes you think of the other leagues. And I just love it when the British press tries to cover the sport and says that, like, Freddie Adu signs a DP contract for the Rowdies. I just laugh every time because people aren't studying this. I don't think you could have done the Cosmos and given homage to what the name is and put them in MLS. Like you could have, you cannot put, bring Bethlehem Steel back and throw them into MLS. I'm sure if you talk to some of the guys, they probably have thought of bringing back some of the names before they brought Timbers, Vancouver, and Seattle in. But the Cosmos name is like bringing Freddie Adu back. It's one of those names that it's glorified and thought of by the retro junkies, but in and of itself, to this generation, and I'm saying 20-year-olds, it means nothing.
Yeah, you know, I was wrong about that. I thought it was a big freaking deal, and found that I was wrong, that you're right, actually, with that, that it means zilch to that to those people. And in fact, the Sounders, the Timbers, they meant more because there had been a continuity or a degree of continuity in those names, those teams in particular, not the Whitecaps, not the Earthquakes, but that had fought in, like, lower division leagues in that dark period, the dark ages, as I call it, between 1984 and 1996, between the fall of the NASL and the start of MLS. There had been Sounders teams, there had been Timbers teams, and then they kept playing in USL. And there's been basically brand continuity. I mean, I talked about this with George yesterday, off the air, that the Sounders brand has existed for all but about 2 or 3 years since 1974. The Cosmos brand disappeared for 27 years, something like that.
Yeah, and my generation doesn't know a Kardec without Once in a Lifetime.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know them before. To be honest, I don't know them without that. I don't know you, the Once in a Lifetime. Because I'll be brutally honest, once I watched it, I went searching online NASL, and your name pops up. Not as far as being a communications director, you just pop up. So, I mean, we've got to temper our thought of what the Cosmos really are. They are, and I don't know what their financial situation is, they are, whatever division you call them, good team. They're not, I wouldn't even call them Nottingham Forest or Derby. They're just a franchise that existed. Now, that's where you can say stuff like Tampa and Fort Lauderdale, who, after the NASL folded, popped up every now and then. Cosmos went dark.
Yes.
And
yeah, I mean, well, yes, before Lord of Strikers brand, I'll point this out. The Strikers brand was basically a continuous brand, with the exception of 2 years when we had a Fort Lauderdale Suns team and then a couple of their other years in Minnesota, from 77 until 1995, 96, when the Miami Fusion came. So it had basically a 19-year lifespan, take out 84 and 85 when we had the Sun, 86 and 87 when the Strikers were still in Minnesota. Yeah, and started back up in 88 right through 97, actually. So, yeah, and the Rowdies were continuous. When the NASL folded, the Rowdies – that Rowdies organization was the one organization that didn't fold. Well, actually, the Sting didn't either. The Sting went to the MISL. And same thing with the Strikers and Minnesota Strikers. But Tampa Bay was the one team that stayed in playing outdoor soccer until 1993. Same organization, same everything, just in a different league.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what these fans have to point. I would love to look at what the Twitter Cosmos fans are, what their demographic is, and see how actually old they are.
Yeah.
Because my fear with soccer supporters, and this is kind of gets back to why I have a show, is that they're uninformed. They're looking at the shiny thing because it's what their friends are talking about. I developed my show to get people to think deeper about the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could go off and follow Barcelona, go ahead. If you're going to follow Manchester City, go ahead. But think about it deeper. And don't become a negative Nancy. Don't become a Twitter fan. I mean, don't become Ted.
Yeah, don't become Ted. Let's get to some comments from listeners. On new subs pod we talked about earlier, and Thomas, Daniel has left a comment. Cosmos fans need to hitch your wagon to Pro Rel, otherwise they've got no hope of D1. And so, of course, a lot of those Cosmos fans, as we talked about, they get behind Ted and everything Ted's saying. Not the drum. Cosmos fans want Pro Rel because they want in the top league. I'm a Caps fan, and he's got the old Taps logo as his avatar. That is cool. That would be screaming for Pro Rel if we were still in USL. Don Garbage says, loving this conversation. Extremely polarized country right now with Klinsmann, Pro Rel, etc. I love the tension. Okay, so I wanted to get to the Klinsmann topic. So it seems like Twitter is driving the Klinsmann conversation again, where we have two camps. Klinsmann on the pro Klinsmann people who will defend anything he does, and then the anti Klinsmann people, which includes some prominent journalists. Actually, there's some prominent journalists on both sides, but more on the anti Klinsmann side that bash any quote he gives in any article, and then use Twitter to wind up their followers. Because, of course, they're not necessarily following all the fans, but all the fans are following them. I think of Leander Sherlock, I'm going to call him that way here, from FoxSoccer.com. He obviously has something, he has a hard-on or something for Klinsmann, and he's anything anti, and I like Leander Sherlock, he's writing a lot. He's one of the really good American soccer writers. But on Klinsmann, he's made his mind up, and he's used Twitter to fuel the conversation and fuel the anger towards JK, towards the national team manager. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, you and I are both writers, so I mean, you know, when you get it set in your head about something, and I'll be brutally honest, people who have listened to me long enough know for about a couple of years, I hated Landon Donovan with a passion. I just ripped into him regardless, and then I had someone off air text me and say, "Cut it. This is who he really is." So I can understand what Leander's going through. I'm kind of like my father when it comes to coaches, in that there's good and bad with both of them. Now, the one thing about Jurgen that a lot of people are missing here is they're thinking, oh, he's just this outsider. He doesn't know U.S. soccer. He doesn't know U.S. sports. He's been living in the country since the 90s. He played in one of the lower leagues. Folks, he knows what he's talking about. Yes. Yeah. Is he German? Yes. He's an all-star. Yes. He's coached in other things. To effect change in this sport, you have to ask the difficult questions. And I like that he does that. I like that he just doesn't massively call up all the MLS players call up all of the German players will go, this is who it is. I mean, he's capped some players, and we'll be brutally honest, he's capped some players or fallen in love with some players that have backfired on him. I have a sad feeling that Julian Green is going to backfire on him. He's, or as what I have called, Freddie Adu Part 2.
Yeah, DeAndre Yedlin hasn't yet, but that's another one that could.
That's not his fault.
John Brooks.
Yedlin's not his fault because I think there is a I think there's a gap overseas, and this would be a real interesting thing to talk about with a Brit, is when the Americans go over sans maybe Dempsey, they just don't work out overseas. And Yedlin is, because Spurs are a well-loved franchise, club over here, that they had to have that American. I mean, they had Dempsey. Now they have Yedlin.
They've had Keller. They've had Americans for the years.
Yeah. So I think with I think with Jurgen that we're afraid because we're so soccer insular that if we're so.
Yeah, I think a lot of the conversation about him has to do with the fact that he's foreign. I asked Richard Farley, our friend, our colleague here at World Soccer Talk, about this, and he said, well, you know what, the only way we would fix it if Jurgen went back in time, and his birth certificate said he was born in California rather than moving there in his 30s. Speaking of Spurs, of course, Clint's been a Spurs fan. I want to get back to Liverpool. Blaskowski says Daglish with three exclamation points in caps. Rodgers has the whole pompous thing down, at least for me. Let me ask you this, since we're talking about this conversation, social media. Brendan Rodgers gives some of the most mind-numbing press conferences, right? Some of the strangest post-match interviews. But is it because, as I'm thinking about this topic, he knows how the reaction is going to be on Twitter, so he's going to have to say, hey, you know, we were really in this game, even though Manchester United beat us 3-0. We were really in it. Raheem's not with them anymore, but let's say this is last year. Raheem played well. Coutinho played well. Philippe was great. Because he does that, right? But is it because of the Twitter?
I don't think he's that stupid. I think Brendan is smarter than people think he is. In that, you got to look from where he came, who he followed. Kenny Dalglish is hilarious. When you listen to him, that dry Scottish humor, I mean, I've been saying this for years. Someone overseas needs to give the damn Dalglishes their own show. Because if you follow any of them outside of Paul, they're all a riot. So going from the dry humor that is Kenny Dalglish to Rodgers, you're going to get the coach, because once again, people don't realize this. Rodgers is insanely young. I don't think he's even 45. He's got a philosophy. I mean, was Alex Ferguson always the best of media? No, he kicked most of them out.
Yeah, right.
So we've got to temper what we think, because we're looking at coach and wanting him to say reactionary things. Okay, so if you say reactionary things, like Jose Mourinho says all the time, you're going to be hated. Well, if you say things, if you don't say them, you're going to be hated. Either way.
Right, because, people tell me Manuel Pellegrini, why doesn't he say anything? Why doesn't he say anything? But then he's the opposite extreme of Mourinho, right? Mourinho says too much, it says some ridiculous things, and we can't stand him.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be perfectly blunt. I wish Mourinho would go away completely. I wish all the Chelsea fans would go away. And one of my favorite things to do is to walk up to a fan on campus and ask them what their team was before they started rooting for Chelsea. It's completely evil to do, but that's neither here nor there. No, that's the thing with Brendan Rodgers is I think he sees what the media is and realizes he really can't say much. So he has to say something dull and just go with it, because it's a no-win situation for him. When you're at a big club, you can't win regardless. If you win the title, okay, why aren't you going to follow it up the next year? I mean, we're going to see that this year with Jose Mourinho. If he doesn't place and Man City runs away with it, he's going to be hated. We're such a bad fan nowadays nothing's good for us.
Right.
Nothing. Yeah. And that's getting atrocious. I mean, the guy that you said, Unsub Dan, is one of my favorite follows on Twitter, and I love his podcast. You know what who he really likes? Brian Clough. He goes and reads pretty much anything with Brian Clough. Now, he could go and read any other person. What's he doing? He's reading someone in the past. Probably would read a Don Revy book too, if there was anything out there. But I put it this way: there's fans that are young.
It's kind of sad. There's nothing really glamorous about Don Revy out there. Even though Leeds won, and they had such good teams. But there is really Don Revy's reputation, by the way, for those who don't know, was soiled by his tenure as England manager, and then his dealings with. Admiral, or was it Admiral? Some other outfit, a merchandising company, apparel company, and then he's moved to the United Arab Emirates. So his reputation kind of got soiled after he left Leeds. But, you know, good point. We'll get right back to the discussion in a minute. Want to say to all of our listeners, if you're enjoying this episode of Divers and Cheats, it's time to give a shout out to the sponsor who made this entirely possible, Rabble.tv. If you're not familiar with Rabble, it's a completely new way of experiencing sports on TV. The concept is simple. The next time you want to watch your favorite soccer team on television, but you're tired of the announcers because they're biased against your team or they're simply not that good, press the mute button and then head over to Rabble.tv to listen and get a real fans audio perspective broadcast of the game. I'll actually be doing one of these broadcasts from the Tampa Bay-New York game live from Al Lang on Saturday night. I have to say, though, the New York Cosmos fans, they might not want to listen to my broadcast in advance. And if there isn't a broadcast available, you can create your own broadcast by switching on your mic and calling the match. It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. With Rabble, you can listen to broadcasts on your desktop through your iOS app and now through your mobile browser. Plus, you can join in the conversation, as some of you guys have done tonight, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. So take a moment to thank our sponsor for making this episode possible. That's Rabble TV. Where Rabble.tv, keep in mind, it's Rabble TV, but Rabble.tv is the web address, where it's your team and it's your call. Let's get back to some comments here. Matt the Drum says, and this is very interesting because this goes back to the whole social media polarizing and Twitter polarizing everyone. Why can't people talk about a pro-rel hybrid system that would make MLS owners happy as well as traditionalists? That is the interesting conversation. That is the interesting and intelligent conversation. The problem, Steve, I think you would agree with this, is that with Ted and the Cosmos fans on one side and these MLS psychopathic loyalists on the other, that kind of intelligent, reasoned approach never sees the light of day.
It would see the light of day if Ted would do the one thing I told him to do 2 years ago, is go have a meeting with Garber. Go see Galati and set yourself up. Ted could be so much more powerful than his thumbs are and go and talk to these people instead of getting behind the unwashed masses and yell and scream. I have said on a number of things, and I have called Ted out on a number of.
I'm going to let you continue in a minute, but there's just a classic comment from since Daniel wants to partake in this, and this is great. Comment right from him: Leeds won their medals by cheating. Of course, he gives me a smiley face, but that is the Brian Clough line. So continue. Sorry, I just have to get that out there.
That I love his sarcasm.
By the way, were cheated out during that period. Cheated out of a UEFA Cup against AC Milan. That was when Revy coached them. And then in 75, actually the season Clough, the 74-75 season, the season Clough began as the manager, and then was fired after 60 days or 40 days. I can't even remember the number of days. And Jimmy Arnfeld.
44.
44 days, thank you. Jimmy Arnfeld, who had been great player for Blackpool, took over as their manager. They were robbed in the European Cup final against Bayern Munich. So Leeds had their share of cheating going against them, too. Maybe it was an anti-British thing. I don't know. But continue. Sorry. I didn't want to make this show about Leeds and Derby and Forest, but we always kind of get there somehow. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the thing with saying pro-rel, you say it online and you get mocked one way or you get jumped on, then that's what's sad, because realistically, if it wasn't such a polarizing thing, you could have a very great topic to talk. You could have – there are great minds that are on both sides that you could talk about this with. Ted's not a stupid man. By any stretch of the imagination, you could sit down and have a town hall meeting with anybody with soccer media and talk about this and have a great meeting. You could do it. Now, sadly, never going to happen. Never going to happen. It's the Fox News effect on soccer. And I just, at this point with Crowell, I don't talk about it anymore. Now, when our good friend Dan Feuerstein calls into my show, it suddenly goes to it. Or when Ryan Seelock wants to get a little, because he does not like Ted. What goes at it?
But Ted, the point is, Ted has wound up all these people on Twitter. So he sits on Twitter all day. He's not the only one. He's the most notable example. We like to talk about Ted. He's going to be on this show at some point in the near future. We're going to discuss these issues. He is soccer reform. So one of the things I've told Ted, because I do talk to him like you do, Ted, why don't you talk about other aspects of reform around the game? There are serious things where the USSF needs to reform things, and he acknowledges that. USSF has to reform things. This has to happen. That has to happen. The relationship with youth clubs, etc. But to him, it all changes if there's Perel. If to him, and this is the ideological dogma of Ted, the NASL is not responsible for any of their faults, any of their shortcomings, any of the things they've done wrong as a business, any of the things they've done wrong as individual NASL clubs, because they're in a closed system, so they can't really be held responsible for their actions. It's all the fault of MLS and Soccer United Marketing and the USSF. And then there are people who parrot that argument and then start arguing with you, which is why you don't have them on your show, why you can't have them on your show.
I can't have any of them. I can't have Ted. I would love to do an hour with him alone and talk about this, because he raises some very good points, and then the crowd comes in. Now, to be honest with you, that's never to happen, because I refuse to have him on, because he's gone at me way too many times. And I know there are teams out there, and you probably do know this too, that have him blocked.
Yeah.
That refuse to talk to him. And there's a
prominent journalists that have him blocked, and there are prominent journalists who cover NASL who prefer NASL to MLS that have him blocked. So even people on his side of the argument think he's too dogmatic.
You're the only one I'm confused that doesn't have him blocked. Of all the top media guys, I keep looking and going,
It's Bo. Bo doesn't have him blocked. Bodor, Ivis doesn't have him blocked. There are a few that he's still able to interact with, me, as you mentioned. But that's really about it. I think Goff has him blocked. Most everyone else has him blocked.
Yeah, pretty much everybody that I know of. I know Dan has him blocked. I've had him blocked for years. I take him off every once in a while just to screw with him. But, I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, besides Ted, there is so much in the sport, even with what NASL is trying to do, and I predicted this a couple of years ago, is trying to do. There's so much good to talk about with this sport that Twitter has just ruined it. Just ruined it. I mean, now I don't get much hate on Twitter because, once again, I don't talk about the top things. I mean, I talked about New England Revolution last week. I've talked San Francisco City FC, because I don't skirt the top hard topics. But that is because I know if I put something on that's going to be a little testy, and I did that when I talked about Rongen, when I dedicated a show to Rongen, I got a little bit of backfire on it. So you have to be kind of conscious of what's out there. Like, I don't talk Liverpool. I'm a Liverpool fan. I don't talk, though.
You expose yourself. You're right, because when I've tried to take a moderate stand towards Manchester City, part of the reason I've spent days off of Twitter at times have been after City games, when I've tried to be very moderate about some of our players, saying, hey, they're not performing, there's something wrong. How can you say that? This guy, or if it's the opposite extreme, you know, Jesus Navas isn't really that bad, or, oh, how could you say that? He's terrible. And it's just, there's this narrative, and they're like gangs on Twitter, right? There's like vigilante law on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there is that on both sides. I mean, I jokingly put up every so often outside of my words, okay, like one I always put up is, okay, who the hell has Preki? And the other one is, okay, Liverpool fans, what about Brendan Rodgers do you hate today? Because that's all I see all the time. His transfer dealings are horrible. His tactics are horrible. His players are horrible. Now, I'm not sitting here and saying that Brendan Rodgers or the players at Liverpool are great all the time. They're not. Great players have bad games. Lionel Messi's had bad games. He's had bad months. Cristiano Ronaldo's had bad months. I'm sure you could see Man City players that have had bad months. But the level of hate, because we all play Football Manager, and I do it on the bus every day when I'm going to work, is because we haven't done, because we did well with that, our favorite team. We've taken our favorite team to European gold. So why can't these people do it? And the thing that really bugs me is that in order to coach in the EPL, you have to have a UEFA A license.
Correct.
Or some type of license.
UEFA A or UEFA Pro, you have to have one of those two.
That's the top of the line, folks.
Yeah.
That's the top of the line.
Guys who don't have their badges, you get and if they're hired, I think they get 3 months, 6 months, something like that. They get those badges or they can't keep the job. I mean, there are actual job qualifications you have to meet. You have to meet certification requirements. You know, we'll talk about this for a minute, Steve. You've got some coaching badges, so you kind of you understand this better than the Twitterverse.
Yeah, no, I will put it out this way. Now, I'm not saying I am David Moyes or any of that. I have a USAE license because I coach U17s here in New York, and that was more of the simple fact that the club I needed to have a coach that had an E on them. Now, that's the basic level for before they put it. I got right under the limit for when they put it. They just, as I was getting my E, put in the F license. I recommend anybody who follows the sport, likes the sport, go and get your badges. They're a lot of fun. You will learn more about the sport than you ever thought possible. In fact, Unsub Dan, I have told him for God, he'll say I'm underestimating this. I've said maybe about 6 months he should go and get his license. Just for the hell of it.
I talked about doing it. Steve Berlusconi, Steve's the communications manager at the Strikers, who used to be my assistant at the NASL, we've talked about it now for 3 years, doing the class together, more than 3 years. We started talking about it like in late 2011. We still haven't done it. He's a lot younger than I am, so he'll probably get around to doing it. Maybe we still will. This is incentive. I should call Steven in the morning and see if we should do this. But my boss at the NASL, David Downs, had a USSF D license. And he said it taught him so much about the game and understanding the game from the standpoint where he, as an Arsenal fan, appreciated some of the things he used to question Wenger about a little more and was much more tolerant of some of Arsene Wenger's decisions once you've even gone through that kind of basic coursework. So that's something to understand. You know, these games can be useful as scouting tools, but they're not the be-all and end-all. You mentioned David Moyes. No. David Moyes used Football Manager as a scouting tool when he was at Everton and used it successfully, but it was one component of about 10 different things he did. And Moyes was constantly having to look for bargains in the transfer market because of Everton's financial situation, which is now a little better, which is why they were able to afford Lukaku and not have to sell Stones. But when Moyes was the manager, they were always scraping the bottom of the barrel as far as transfers were concerned. And he used Football Manager. He readily admits that. And he didn't use it when he went to Man United, which is maybe why he didn't do as well there. But it is just one component. And so often people's judgments about players are based on this stuff. I mean, I was sitting with Steven Berlusconi again the other night at Starbucks, and Steve said to me, you know, and Steve likes Borussia Dortmund. He said, I love Aubameyang, but if you play FIFA and you live on FIFA, as so many of these people on Twitter do, you think he's the best player in the world because he has because his attributes lend itself to that particular style of video game.
Oh, I'll give you another example, and this guy's just getting into Ligue 1 right now. The last one of Football Manager, Football 14, Jimmy Cabot, he's at Troyes right now, a winger for them, sets the world afire. Once you get him as a 19-year-old, sets the world afire. I've seen his stats. He's never going to be on the French national team. So if you're judging off of what Football Manager does, you're going to be wrong. I mean, once again, I played over in – I had one save where I had Rivaldo playing at Colorado.
Yeah, no, you can sometimes get these guys to obscure places. I mean, I remember when I had in Football Manager, I think I had Del Piero playing for Derby. I mean, it was Blackburn, someone in one of my Football Manager games, and it was and Pirlo and Del Piero off that Juve team. Pirlo, of course, has been with Milan before, but I had those two guys playing. I think it was actually for Blackburn, now that I think about it. And that would never happen in real life. Now, of course, I didn't think that Shaqiri would sign with Stoke either. That's a, you know, maybe that's a one-off. But
my brother-in-law is absolutely loving this because he's from Stoke. He loves that people actually give a damn about. He's like, we're just a backwater team that plays at a place that's named after an encyclopedia. He says, I like this. he says, I like this, that people are actually signing. Now, realistically, Shaqiri's there for probably a year.
Ah, this is interesting. So before we get back to Shaqiri, Brendan mentions to us that the database that Moyes used was the pro database that was developed by the same guys, but it's not actually the game. That's a good point. I think he's correct. Moyes used it. Database that they developed based on all the scouting they did for the game, but not actually the game. So, because the game has all these other attributes to make guys better in the game that are not realistic. Go on, yeah. So you think Shaqiri's at Stoke for a year? That's it.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's doing that to move up a level because you see how his career has kind of gone kind of sideways. That if he does well here, that you'll get the bump up to another team. I mean, he's never going to be at a Man City, Man United, Barcelona, PSG type of team. He's going to be that next level down. And somewhere coming at Stoke, and we all know Mark Hughes' track record. And where I mean, for God's sakes, he played at Man United and Bayern Munich. So
And Barcelona.
I forgot about that. I had that W.H. Smith guide of the 80s for the longest time until it just finally fell apart.
I have one or two of those too, which especially for a Liverpool fan is invaluable. Ian Rush moves on, and then you bring in someone else, and that worked for so long for Liverpool. But then when Ian Rush went to Italy, so surprisingly towards the end of his career, but then. It all kind of fell apart. The 1980s were a great time to talk about. So Morty says, we want 10 on Rabble. We want grassroots soccer people on Rabble. We want youth academy here. We want it all. Another point here, I think it was from Matt again, was about the need to talk about solidarity payments. That's something that someone like Ted should be talking about. I noticed that he's taken some of Olivia Bird's stories and commented on them, but then it's always in the context of pro rel. Olivia Bird from SI.com, formerly of NBC Sports of Soccer, who is the pro soccer talk, who is in the Seattle area, has done just a knock-up job on this DeAndre Yedlin story and his youth club. And basically MLS and the Sounders violating not the Sounders being part of MLS, the MLS violating FIFA rules as far as payments to youth clubs.
Is that a surprise? It's not a surprise to me that they're not going to try to sell down any of the money. I mean, I don't remember how to say his last name, but he's one of the first players, so one of the first Americans to go over. He played for Brighton Hove. He's in L.A. now. I think you know him, Peter Skurrius.
Yes.
He talked about the same thing too years ago on my show, and he was talking about that you need to share. You need to share the money. I mean, I'll put it this way. I have three Kenyans on my team that what happens if they go on and play in college and they all will? What if they get signed? Oh, we're never gonna see any money from that. But we help develop it. It's kind of like, oh, thank you for parking them for a while and making them good.
Whereas now, there's a different relationship in England. I'll just give you the example of Sterling. Sterling came from QPR to Liverpool, and QPR, we know, was overspent. They had the seventh highest wage bill in the Premier League last season, even though they were relegated. They had the highest wage bill outside the really big clubs. They needed that 7 or 8 million they got for developing Sterling. Sturridge, for developing Sterling. We, Man City, got a payment. When you guys bought Sturridge from Chelsea, we got a payment because we had developed him. So that's the way it works in other countries. If you come through someone's system, they get compensation if you develop them before they're the age of 18. Here, MLS seems to feel like they're not bound by that. And the thing that gets me about the Yedlin case, those are local youth clubs. He's a local guy from Seattle. He's not some guy that was picked in the super draft that is from Dallas and went and played for New England. He is a local there, developed by a local youth club you would think the Sounders needed to keep a good relationship with.
Exactly, and that's what MLS is missing. I mean, but they're based on the NFL. I mean, think where Garber came from.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I have no love for the NFL anymore after these past couple of years. But that's kind of where Garber is going with it. And, I mean, I have to – when I talk to people outside of the sport, I have to temper what I say about them because it's always all, oh, we've got Major League Soccer, everything's great. Not really, folks. Or then this is what the pro rel people miss, is that they think you could just drop pro rel in here. Keep in mind, the league that Ted keeps mentioning has been around since the 1800s.
Yes.
We've been around for 20.
Yes.
Case in point. I mean, that's why all of it, and that's why most of soccer fans right now are young. I mean, yeah, there's my generation, and I'm younger than you, that loves the sport for what it is. But the next generation that's getting in scares me. It scares me that they don't take the time to read this. I mean, until you understand what the struggles are that even my generation had to see to watch the sport, you begin to really appreciate it. I mean, I'm sitting next to a Detroit City FC scarf. Now, people that are following the sport nowadays, than last year, oh, they're the greatest franchise. We love them. They've always been here. Not really. 3 years ago, if you had this show, and I wish you would have, had said that three of the soccer hotbeds in this country are Chattanooga, Sacramento, and Detroit, we would have all laughed.
Yeah.
Because none of them were around.
Yeah, Chattanooga was already kind of a story by 2009-2010, but Detroit no one saw coming. No one saw really the kind of success we were going to have in Louisville this year. That's been a stutter. No one saw the kind of decline that we've had in Rochester, right by in your neck of the woods. I mean, I was mentioning this on the show the other day. We thought 10 years ago Rochester was that next great market. We thought Rochester would be Seattle. We got to wrap up here in a minute, but Seattle, one thing I learned on Twitter, Seattle invented this sport, right?
They invented everything. They probably will next year say that they invented this show.
Yeah. Well, they invented everything. The sport didn't exist. And I remember one of my back and forth with the Sounders fan in 2009 and getting into it with him. And he said, well, maybe we didn't invent American soccer, but we certainly perfected it. Like, okay, I should have saved that and framed that. I didn't know how to take screenshots at the time. But that is the attitude in the Pacific Northwest. But I love most of you in the Pacific Northwest, but there is a contingent of fans. Actually, Portland fans aren't that way, sorry. And Vancouver fans are not that way. And I loved working with Vancouver when I was in the NASL, when they played with us for the year before they went to MLS. But the Seattle fans, ugh. It's a whole other thing. That was always an issue, actually, at the lower division level. You know, it was cool when Vancouver's fans would come and travel. People in Minnesota could tell you this, but when the Seattle fans came to town, even when in the USL days, oh boy. So they have a chip on their shoulder, and they certainly exercise it on Twitter. Steve, where can people find you on Twitter, of course, and your podcast? Can you give us a couple words about your pod and your Twitter?
Well, my Twitter is YellowCardSCB. I'm very original with that. My podcast is YellowCardPod. I'm on Tuesdays 7 till sometimes 8:30, sometimes 8. It depends on how I feel. We talk about everything. I'm like, God, I've had Kardec on three times, and I name drop him every show.
thank you for that.
Yeah.
My agent checks in the mail.
Dan will tell you, we did a running tally one day. I asked Dan to listen to the show and run a tally of how many times I mentioned your name on a show. It was 10 one day. I was like, oh, dear God, I follow him way too much. I talk about everything. And I'm openly one of the most sarcastic people you'll find on Twitter, because when I first got into this, I didn't think I was going to get by on vast knowledge or references, yet I've been doing this show, sitting here watching Blue Bloods, and I recalled Revy. So I decided at the beginning of when I got into soccer that I was going to use my charm and my sarcasm, and it's sometimes backfired on me. I mean, I use it about once a week. I ask who has kidnapped Preki. So I mean, you'll hear a bunch of that. I mean, and I openly try to get my co-host Chris Gluck, who's wonderful, to laugh at least once or twice an episode, because it's what's good about this sport. The sport's given me so much, and I just hope to each month give them at least something.
You are the second most sarcastic follower on Twitter for me, the most being one Thomas Rongen. That ties it together.
Oh, dear
well.
God, he's crazy. Yes. I love Rongen. I mentioned that I live near Dinosaur Barbecue, and his response is, I want to hug a dinosaur.
that's Thomas in a word. And actually, there's a place called Dinosaur World right off the highway when you drive between Orlando and Tampa. So maybe Thomas checked that place out while he was coaching Tampa in his couple of stints in the Tampa Bay area. So you can find me at Twitter at KKFLA737. Of course, check us out at worldsoccertalk.com. Follow World Soccer Talk at World Soccer Talk and at Rabble TV. I want to thank Steve for being on the show. We're going to do this again sometime soon, Steve, and we'll talk more about the Ted issue, and maybe we'll have Ted on in a show with a show real soon. So once again, thank you for listening, and we will catch you on the other side. Enjoy your football.